Welcome to AAA Sky. Today we're talking with comedian and Star Talk co-host Chuck Nice about his passion for science and communicating it to others. I'm Irene Pease.
And I'm Stanley Fertig. AAA Sky is produced by the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York, whose mission is to promote the study of astronomy and to emphasize its cultural and inspirational values. Find out more about us at www.aaa.org.
First, a word from the president of AAA, Brian Berg.
Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of AAA Sky, the official podcast of the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York. I am Brian Berg, the president of the association. I want to take a moment to thank all of you who have been listening, supporting, and otherwise leaving comments for all of us here at AAA, for all of our endeavors, particularly with this podcast, which, as I mentioned in the very first podcast, is just a huge, huge undertaking. Myself and everyone else here at AAA, we do this, though, out of our love, our respect, our admiration for science and astronomy and the New York community and the worldwide community of humanity, so that we can all share and revel in these amazing, amazing accomplishments and things that we are learning day by day with all things astronomy. With that said, in this podcast, we have the honor of talking with my friend, Chuck Nice. I'm sure everyone knows Chuck Nice, or at least knows of Chuck Nice, comedian, radio personality, and of course, the co-host of Star Talk with the one and only Neil deGrasse Tyson. Chuck is a true, true erudite, and I always enjoy talking with him, whether it is about nonsense, which we certainly talk about sometimes, or whether it's about things related to science and humanity and the world at large. Chuck just truly has an interest in everything that goes on in the world, and in particular when it's science related, and in particular when it is environmentally related and astronomy related. And this interview is truly interesting and fascinating, and I hope that all of you take away a lot from it, as I surely have. I do want to remind all of you to please go to our website at AAA.org and see all of the things that we are doing as an organization. And with that said, Stan and Irene, take it away.
Chuck Nice is a veteran of stand-up comedy with a rich history in entertainment. For years, Chuck has been busy making a name for himself across all media, including radio, television, and the internet. Recently, Chuck was delighted to deliver a TED Talk on the main stage of the Vancouver conference regarding the unintended consequence of future tech and human interaction. Currently, he is the co-host of Star Talk with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson on Nat Geo. I got to speak with Chuck about Star Talk and some of his other work. So welcome to AAA Sky, Chuck. Thank you so much for meeting with and chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I have about 8 minutes, so let's get to it. No, of course, it's my pleasure to be here. Yeah. It's great to be a member of AAA, and I love the fact that we are directing people's gaze towards the cosmos.
Yes.
And what an exciting thing to know that when you look up, that you are here and a part of something that is a billion times over. Here we are in the suburb of this one spiral galaxy, but yet we know outside of that galaxy, there's a billion other galaxies. You know, it's like, how cool is that, man? Like, yeah. And I'm a part of that. Like, you know, I am not insignificant. As a matter of fact, I could not be more significant in that all the things that make up those galaxies that you see, all the things that are extruded from supernova, those things reside in me as well. Mm-hmm. Metals. Carbon and all of that crap is inside of me, man. And so, you know,
yeah.
As Carl Sagan says, we are star stuff.
We are.
And I actually heard it from Neil deGrasse Tyson before I heard it from Carl Sagan, because, you know, Neil's
close connection there. You've met him, right?
What's that? Yeah, Neil, I think, you know, we bumped into each other once at a convention.
Yeah. So actually, I was kind of curious, like how you first got involved with StarTalk. If you want a quick preview or a quick description of StarTalk for some of our listeners, if anyone out there isn't familiar with it. But yeah, what is StarTalk, and what about this project made you say, yes, I definitely want to be involved with this. Please sign me up.
So StarTalk is an intersection of entertainment, pop culture, and science. They come together, as Neil says, where pop culture and science collide. Our specific interest is the cosmos, because it's hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is the director of the Hayden Planetarium Rose Center in the American Museum of Natural History. And he is also an astrophysicist. And it was his idea to come together along with a comedian. And the comedian would provide levity, and he would provide the gravity, as he says. And they were initially funded by a grant from, I think, the National Science Foundation. And now it is a commercially viable entity standing all on its own. The vision being that science is something that is desired, that people are hungry for information, but just like everything else, the information must be palatable. The information must be easily consumed. And so, you know, it's okay to have a delicious food item, but if it's hard to swallow and difficult to digest, you're not going to consume it. Mm-hmm. You know, that just doesn't work that way.
You're lactose intolerant. You're not going to drink that milkshake.
Exactly. The milkshake is still delicious, but if you are lactose intolerant and your name is not Chuck Nice, you're not going to drink it. Because I'm going to drink it, suffer through the pain, and everybody else will suffer with me, if you know what I mean. So,
Fair enough.
But that was his vision. And, you know, the idea was to have a rotating cast of comedians that would come through. The way I got involved was I got a call from one of the people who at the time was booking the show, and she booked me, worked with a booker that I know at the time of a TV show I was doing. So I was on a TV show, and the talent booker from the TV show said, hey, this friend of mine who's a talent booker for this other show thinks that you're hilarious and you're smart. And I was like, why? So anyway, she called me and said, Neil deGrasse Tyson would like to have a chat with you in his office. And I thought it was a joke, even though I knew that somebody was going to be calling me about a show, but I didn't know it was Neil deGrasse Tyson. Neil deGrasse Tyson, I knew who he was from Nova. At that point, I knew it because I had seen this. I was like, that's the black dude on Nova.
Yeah.
What?
Right.
And so I thought the person was joking, because not too many people knew that I like, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, but I love Nova and I'm a PBS freak, and, you know, and I love science. Secretly, I was a closet geek. Anyway, I was really excited. I went to go spend some time in this office, and we were supposed to talk for 15 minutes. We talked for like an hour and like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to talk about the show, and we talked about everything but the show. And at the end, he was like, well, I'm not sure if your voice and my voice are not dissimilar enough. we might cause a listening conundrum for the person who is. I was like, okay, just don't give me the job, dude. It's cool. I had fun meeting you. As far as I'm concerned, I really don't care. I got to meet you, be up here in your office here at the planetarium. This is amazing. Anyway, like the next day, they were like, hey, can you come in and do a show with Neil? And I was like, what? Okay. And that was 11 years ago.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
That was 11 years ago, and I think we're going on 12 soon. We're going on 12. So anyway, yeah, it was 11 years ago. Anyway, and that's it. And ever since, and you know, and the thing is that it has been such a great thing for me, because it's given me the impetus to do more research on my own, which I've always done. I mean, you know, you look you look around my house and you just see stacks of books on science. Look right here. I just look down and see, this isn't a plant. Look at this.
Scientific American. I can
all
vouch.
I got to do is look I down. See it. Look down it's, and boom. What do I
the
have?
The math of quantum mechanics. That's heavy stuff.
Yeah, man. I love it. So
it's great.
So yeah, I've always been this person privately, and I've never talked about it. You know what I mean? But and I've always been the guy at the party, like, you know, where, you know, people would bring up stuff. I'll never forget. I tell this story because that's one of my favorite. There's a guy named Leszek, Dr. Leszek. I forget his last name. He was at University of Pennsylvania at the time, and we were at a cocktail party, and he was just kind of by himself and nobody was talking to him. So I walked over to him and he was really shy. And I was like, hey, what's up? I'm Chuck. And, you know, how do you know Bob, who was the guy throwing the party? He was like, oh, you know, he's a friend of my friend. And, you know, I was like, oh, where are you from? Oh, I am from wherever country. And I was like, what are you doing here? I work at the University of Pennsylvania. Yeah, I am. I'm, what are you working on? He goes, it's just research. I was like, yeah, what kind of research? And he goes, I am working with broccoli enzymes and shark DNA. And I was like, oh, so you're working on cancer research. He goes, oh my God.
Someone who's science literate out in and the wild, just running around free at parties.
Exactly. And he freaked out. And I had no idea why he was freaking out, but I had just read. Not his work, but, you know, someone who else was doing similar work. And so we started talking, you know, but that's the kind of like science nerd that I was. I always kept it inside. Then I start working with Neil.
And it all comes out. That,
then it's just all, it's all out in the open now. I'm like, I'm not fooling anybody.
No, you're not.
I am not fooling anyone. I might as well just go ahead and embrace, you know, the whole science thing, and just because I love it, and, you know, and so, yeah. And so we started working together, and, you know, I love it. I say to Neil all the time, thank you so much for allowing me to steal an education. There are people who pay, you know, large sums of money to get the kind of education that I get on an almost daily basis, you know, with respect to having access to and speaking to some of the world's foremost cosmologists, some of the world's most renowned scientists who are making incredible discoveries. And we have them on the show. And what I have to do, though, so that I don't look like an idiot, is I got to go read their stuff.
And that's not always easy. I don't know if they have it like written for the public, or do you have to like go through like research papers?
So let me just say this. I read research papers and I'm not good at it. It takes a long time because they're written for the people who are not just scientifically literate, but that are they're written in a very specific way for their peers. And I was saying, whenever I read anything that's peer review, clearly I'm not the peer.
Yeah, no, but I've had to learn. You read the abstract, you skim, and you read some of the conclusions.
You read the
maybe.
Abstract, and then what you do in the abstract is you find the stuff that pops out, and then you go read the corresponding evidentiary portions of the paper that support what you need to know in the abstract. And that's enough to talk to people about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I'm going to, you know, sit there and have a truly intelligent conversation where, you know, but what I can do is ask questions, because really all I want to do is know stuff.
Yeah.
So what do I care? I don't have to know. That's not my job. That's why you're the scientist.
I'm here to learn.
Right. I'm here to learn stuff. I'm not here to teach people stuff. No. I'm the people. So guess what? Now I know enough to ask you questions about what I don't know, which leads to me knowing even more. So Star Talk is like the most awesome job ever.
So I can only imagine like just all the people that you've talked to, all of the different astronomy concepts that you've covered. Like I think when a lot of people think of astronomy, astrophysics, it's like, it's one subject, but really it's the whole universe outside of the Earth. So that's a lot, it's a whole lot of things.
Right, and it's every science outside of astrophysics as well. Okay. For instance, you know, geology is part of astrophysics. You know, biology is like, if you're an astrobiologist, well, guess what? You're a biologist, but you're looking to the stars with your discipline, you know? Mm-hmm. So And that's the cool thing about it. Like, we get all these people on the show.
More intersections.
Right. And on top of that, you know, of course, you get, you know, material scientists, because how do you go to space? You know, you got to develop, you know, materials that will get you there. And then, of course, you know, other physicists, because that's what, those are the people that are taking the materials, and engineers and all. So it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. I love it.
It's all connected. And so I'm wondering, with all of these different things and your, just your excitement about learning in general, like, is there one or two concepts that really struck you as being like the most intriguing, that you just like were super, super excited, or more excited than usual to learn more about?
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
I don't have a favorite, because anything that I don't know quickly becomes my favorite. Okay. Because I just want to find out more. I will say though, that black holes I find absolutely fascinating. There's just so many things about them, and the fact that we can't see in them creates this mystique and this shroud of mystery, a literal shroud. It's a literal shroud of mystery. Because light cannot escape, and if the light doesn't escape, we can't see it.
Can't see it.
No, because that's how, you know. Because we measure everything in light when we're looking at the universe. We measure everything in light, even though you have, you know, you have the cosmic background, cosmic background radiation behind you, you know, CMB, and
that's still light.
And that's light. That's what we're seeing when we're looking at that, you know? And so, you know, I just feel like I think one of the most exciting things in the world would be ways to measure the universe. I mean, sound is one as well. Like, we have SETI but beyond the senses, I think would be a super cool thing beyond our senses, even augmented, because the light that's behind you right now, those radio waves, which is light, but we can't see that. Yeah. You know, like, we can't see it, right, you know, with our naked eyes. Yeah. We look up into the sky and we see blackness. But how cool would it be to have and measure things beyond what our senses are capable of receiving?
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be super exciting, you know.
Well, but now, that's kind of what we're getting to with like the gravitational waves. Like, that's why that was such a huge breakthrough. It's like, this is a new sense to add to our astronomy suite.
That's
like something that's not a photon.
Right. Right. So this whole idea of the graviton, I think, is a fascinating concept, you know. We live in exciting times, man, because quite frankly, technology and the proliferation of technology to the extent where we are, and computing power together, along with the instrumentation that we are creating. You know, I mean, when you look at CERN, come on. Like, you look at that, you're like, human beings did this? Holy crap.
Yeah, the fact that people are like seriously concerned, like, oh, they might create a black hole that's going to swallow the Earth. And that was like a genuine concern of some people. It's like, that's not going to happen. But isn't it amazing that people are concerned about that?
Absolutely. I mean, that is really kind of cool that when you think about it, the fact that we're concerned about it means that even though it's not going to happen, it's a consideration, you know? And so, you know, it's like, the only scary part is like, we're getting to a place now where like an evil genius Bond villain could become a reality. You know what I mean? Like, but then, you know, some of the other things that really kind of spark my curiosity and imagination is like mining asteroids. Like, when you're looking for, you know, precious metals and the materials that basically run our lives right now, because we live in a world of technology, okay? So you look at these very rare, rare metals. Like, for instance, in your catalytic converter, there's just a tiny, tiny little bit of platinum. But platinum is so rare, people actually steal catalytic converters to get that tiny little bit of metal, right?
Wow.
Well, if we were to mine asteroids, right? This stuff, you know, we would have abundance of this stuff, you know, these rare metals and rare earth metals and stuff like that. It's all out there. It's all like, if it's here, it's out there. Like, how cool would it be? Like, you know, there's, I forget the name of the, I think it's called The Expanse, where the whole idea behind the show is, and it, by the way, it's based on a series of books, but the whole idea behind the show is like, you know, out in the asteroid belt, right? We found a way to traverse this where we can get out there. And why are we out there? Because we're mining asteroids.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you have a business background. So maybe that's, you know, your next project to tackle is make that a viable business venture.
Wouldn't that be, I'll tell you. Exactly. I think, wait a minute. Look, Elon Musk is calling me now. Hello, Chuck.
Tell me you're busy.
Exactly. Sorry, Elon. I'm talking to Irene.
Got some other things going on at the moment.
So yeah. But black holes really excite me. I think just like I said, because they're literally shrouded in mystery. And, you know, we've been doing a lot on the show and we've been talking to scientists about the multiverse and what the multiverse really is. And, you know, and of course, that means you can't do that without talking about, you know, dark gravity. And, you know, so, I mean, when the majority of our universe is made up of something that we don't know what it is, of course, that's really fascinating, you know. And so this gives rise to the theories of, you know, is this an interdimensional leak that we're talking about? You know, that so that gravity can pass through these dimensions, but we can't. I mean, the whole thing is so mind blowing, man. It's like, I hang around these dudes and it's like, you know, I don't even need to smoke weed because like these guys blow your mind with such great, incredibly complex and intricate, elegant thought experiments that you're just like, I don't need to smoke no weed. Just read this stuff and be like, wow. So yeah.
That sounds like an amazing job.
Tell me about it.
A little jealous. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on another podcast that you co-hosted, Playing with Science. It was a spinoff. And I guess it would have been too much of a leap. I was thinking that like Playing with Science, which dealt more with sports and like all the science that is involved with that. But as you were saying, like so many other sciences are involved with astronomy and astrophysics and all these other topics that you already learned so much about. And it was there anything very different about co-hosting the Playing with Science podcast?
So we still do it. It's called, we changed the name to Star Talk Sports Edition, just because it's under the Star Talk umbrella. And Neil is the host along with Gary O'Reilly, who is the co-host with me. Gary is a former professional footballer, played for Tottenham Hotspur over in the UK. And
that's real football, not American football.
Not American football. Sorry, people. It's the you actually play it with your feet, which is why they call it football. So, but yeah, what we call soccer, of course. And so what we do, and Gary is a guy that, you know, just loves knowledge and learning and is conversant in many areas, not just sports, but in so many different areas. And so, the great thing about sports is that there is no sport. There's no sport, period, that does not have its dynamics resting on a platform, a scientific platform. That's all there is to it. Whether you're talking about, you know, the rotation of a baseball in terms of the flight path that it takes, or whether you're talking about the arc of a basketball with its rotation of the ball as it, you know, moves through the air, and what causes the lift, and that's why there's pimples on a basketball, all this kind of great stuff that we explore, you know, whether it is, you know, from a technical standpoint, NASCAR, where every car is built to the same specifications, but yet they find ways to play with the car to get just that much more performance out of it. You know, I mean, and all these technological advances that have come out of NASCAR that you're driving around in your car.
Wow.
You know,
yeah, I figured there'd be like just a lot of engineering and physics and physiology, but probably a lot of other things too that I haven't even thought about.
Yeah, there's a ton of science in sports. I mean, just a ton. Everything from, you know, the gloves that NFL players wear that are made out of materials that make them very sticky from that to the slicks on a Formula One car that allow them to create the most contact with the surface of the road. And of course, you know, the more contact you have, the more friction you have, the better you're going to have grip and handling capabilities. So all this is science, and all these things come from scientists too.
Yeah.
All these industries have scientists working to make their sport better. And so we explore that area, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of, you know, more scientists and scientists coming together and getting information to the public, you have a more recent project that you started, the Climate Campaign.
Yes.
It's real. And I would love, you just want to tell us about that and why the program and why now for you personally.
So personally, it's only a couple years old. I'm still building it. I'm looking for help from everywhere, from people who would like to help in terms of their, you know, getting involved with their own personal effort, to money, to you name it. The idea is this. We all know that there's a problem. That problem is what I call H3C, human-caused climate chaos, H and three C's, human-caused climate chaos, mm-hmm. Or human-caused climate change, if you want, there's still another there. But we don't call it that. And the reason why I renamed it that is so that you know exactly, let's call something what it is. If you give something a name for what it is, then you know exactly what you're dealing with, you know? People used to call it, that guy's perving out, right? But now we know better than to call it perving out, mm-hmm. All right? No, it's sexual assault.
Yeah.
All right. Now, see, that had a bigger effect on you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that dude is perving out. Now, okay, well, I don't even know what that means. I just know he's creepy. But, that's sexual assault. That's a whole nother thing, mm-hmm. right? And so human-caused climate chaos, what I've said to myself was, we are not talking about this. No one's really talking about it. Why? It's unpleasant. It's boring. And quite frankly, we hear about it a lot, but we hear about it as noise. We don't hear about it as a directive, as an issue that we are all responsible. We're all responsible for it. And so the idea behind the campaign is to use entertainment to get people to recognize and get involved. And that's what I'm trying to do. And that means that you take personal action in your own life, but more importantly, you look for ways to enforce accountability, because that's what's most important about this issue, is looking for ways to enforce accountability. That means, where do I put my dollars? Hey man, I want to buy your product, but this is what I realized. You sent me this stuff and it's got like, it weighs 14 ounces. It's 8 inches by 2 inches. And the packaging weighs a pound and a half and takes up half of my trash can. So that's a problem. How do we fix that? You have to let the company know, mm-hmm. and they will respond because they want your business.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not voting for you, because I see that you voted against these initiatives to help save my kid from a disastrous life. My child is looking at a disastrous life, but yet you want to continue to burn fossil fuels because there's a revenue interest. How do you keep that person accountable? I'm not voting for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's about.
Okay.
And you can go to itsreal.com and find out some more, please.
Yeah. I did see that there was a podcast another podcast.
And well, the one thing we need to make this thing work is we need to add to the 2.5 million podcasts that are out there right now. So now there's 2.5 million and one.
But Pod the idea, Zero? Pod Zero?
It's called Pod Zero. And Pod Zero is just conversations that I have with people about what we can do to get involved and make changes with respect to the climate crisis.
Yeah, and I think the description said it's going to be informative, well entertaining. And I think we need that, because when I hear a lot about climate change or climate chaos, as you might call it, human caused climate chaos, it's scary because of the reality of it. And two, it's scary to be like in the midst of a crisis when people are acting like you're not. Like, it's like the zombie movie and there's zombies attacking and people are just like, oh, I need to get milk today.
Right.
So it's twofold terrifying. And so for you to be able to talk to people in a way that's entertaining and not just completely terrifying, I think that's a really unique and much needed thing to an extent.
Well, thanks. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. And we're also trying not to be, you know, the Yale report on climate that came out a couple of years ago cited that the majority of people who hear the bad news, they just shut down. So what we have to do is change. We can't change the narrative, because that would be, you know, lying to people. The narrative is what it is. But what we have to do is change the presentation. And a presentation can be one of positivity. Now, what people don't understand is that there's always going to be opposition to change. And so I was talking to some people in a conference, and I said, anyone who thinks that because we're seeing shifts in perspectives from the public with respect to climate, that this is going to lead to great change, you're wrong. Because the more things start to change, the more desperate these companies are going to be to continue burning fossil fuel. For one reason and one reason only. There's $50 trillion of oil in the ground right now. And it's probably even more, because that's not including fracking and tar sands. You're talking about trillions of dollars. Now, if I gotta dig that up and burn it, Earth be damned, and so humans go along with that. I want my money, and that's where they're coming from. And when that much money is at play, people will lie to themselves and convince themselves that there isn't a problem. And some people have done that. You know, not everybody is a denier. Some people genuinely don't believe because it's not in their interest to believe. So what we have to do is look at the positive. And the positive is we could create a whole brand new economy. We can make things better. We can live in a cleaner, more sustainable world. And we can have an equitable distribution of wealth in the process of creating this new economy, because it isn't just a few people digging up a bunch of stuff and burning it. It is a very wide platform upon which others can prosper. And that's the beauty of it. So that's where my efforts are going to be.
That sounds like more positive, like, yeah, action. You're saying the action, like, not kind of hiding from it, but voting and really acting in a way that'll make a difference.
Yeah. And by the way, all these things take time. And here's the scary part. We're not going to be able to get off of fossil fuel anytime soon. It's just not possible. Okay. Our entire infrastructure of energy is set up for fossil fuel right now. But in the process of transitioning, man, you want to talk about, you know, people having great paying jobs. You want to talk about an economy that is booming. You want to talk about, and in the process, you start taxing the dirty stuff. So then that even speeds up the process even more. So, you know, there's a sea change that can happen, and it's all good, but you're never going to hear it Foxes never tell you that hen houses need security. It's never going to happen.
Definitely. So that's where you come in, right? As a science communicator, do you consider yourself a science communicator? Because I mean, you're communicating a lot of science to a lot of people. I don't know if you feel like that.
I never did. I always consider myself a comedian, and that's it. But you're right. I have to accept the fact that I am a science communicator. It's a bad thing for me because I don't want the responsibility. There is a great responsibility in communicating science to people. You have to, one, make sure that you're doing it properly, that you have your facts right, that you're not turning people off, that you're not, you know, I look at all these scientists that I work with, everybody from neuroscientists to the chief scientists of NASA, who I've known two now, to astronauts, who I know three, and they're all science communicators. It's mm-hmm. become a part of the job for anybody in the science, in the sciences. And they're all extremely conscientious about how they put out information. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I'm a comedian, and you know, so the information is always been secondary. The reaction is what I'm looking for. And so now I'm more cognizant of, you have to be on point with your information, and you know, and so they have to become equal, you know, which makes it a little harder, you know.
So challenging, but rewarding. You think it's been rewarding?
Oh, without a doubt. Oh God, I love it. Listen, I am still flabbergasted, but I get these emails or direct messages at least once a week. Dear Chuck, been listening to you and Neil for I don't know how many years. The information that is put out is so great, and I have such a great time listening. Just wanted to let you know, I went back to school last year. I'm on my way to becoming this. That is huge.
That's amazing.
That's huge, man. And I get one of those a week. I can't imagine what Neil is getting.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he gets
definitely making a difference. Yeah. Huge difference.
He gets, but I mean, the difference, he's the one making the difference. I'm just entertaining people, you know,
but that's key, right? You're saying it's key to not have people go running the other direction, but to have them sit and listen and take the stuff in. So
it is true. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
important.
I mean, I'm happy to play a part. That's all I know. I'm humbled and happy to play a part.
We're happy to get to listen to you, of course. So kind of our last question that we just like to ask all of our guests for AAA Sky is, doesn't have to be science related, but you have a favorite place or thing to do in New York City? Like if you have guests from out of town, you're like, oh, we have to go see this, or we have to go do this. Favorite New York City thing?
Yeah. And it's scary as hell. It's gotten less scary because we now have bike lanes. But my favorite thing to do in New York City is ride my bike. And whenever I with somebody, now I used to ride it with my like 8-year-old daughter before there were bike lanes all over the place, and people thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what are you going to do? This is New York. This is how it's done. Like, you know, she can die in many, many different ways all over the world. So I'm not going to, you know. But people are like, you're crazy. You got that little girl out there on the bike with you. And I'm like, eh. And here's why it's my favorite thing to do. That and walk. Mm-hmm. That's how you see New York, people. You don't see New York on a bus. You don't see New York, from a car. The way you see New York is you're either walking, but you can take time to see what you're looking. You can stop, check some things out. New York is full of some of the most incredible architecture you'll ever see. I'm not talking about the big skyscrapers. I'm just talking about, like, so, you know, it was settled by the Dutch. So go to the Upper West Side. Just look at the sides of buildings. You'll be like, oh, my God, this is absolutely beautiful. Go downtown. Look at our courthouses. You'll be like, oh, my God, who knew? It's so wonderful. Like, there is so much, like, hidden beauty in this town. you know, little teeny gardens that you'll come across, you know, things like that. And then the people, you got to go people watching in New York City, you know, hey, I'm walking over here.
That's a real treat.
you want to listen. It's the only city in the world where you get free entertainment 24/7, free entertainment. Hey, come on. So yeah, my favorite thing to do is to either walk around, take pictures, or ride my bike and just check things out. Because everything else is now that we've been in this pandemic, I'm no longer taking it for granted, like Broadway and shows and shopping and all of that stuff is great. But the cool thing is, walking around, even during the pandemic, you're like, oh my God, this is a totally different New York. This is unbelievable. Like, this is walking city. Yeah. One of my favorite days, it was a beautiful spring day 2 years ago, It was a beautiful spring day. Oh, 3 years ago to be exact. And I had a meeting at Columbia University. And I walked from Columbia University to the Village.
Nice.
And it was just like when you would think like, oh man, I walked all there's 100 blocks. I feel like crap. No. It was exhilarating. I felt like I had more energy when I got down to the Village than I did when I left Columbia University because the city is electrifying. And the way you take advantage of that electricity is you got to walk it. So that's my favorite thing.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say, like, yeah, if you're walking like that far and you're tired, it's like you're doing it wrong. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing about all your experiences and visions. We really appreciate you joining us for AAA Sky.
Well, I appreciate AAA because, listen, like I said, you guys are directing people's gaze towards the cosmos, and that's a wonderful thing. I can't wait for you to bring back the telescope nights where, you know, one of the most incredible things that people don't know about is, you know, when AAA has these telescope nights, like in different parts of the city, you don't have to have a telescope. You could just show up, and it's such a lovely thing. People can't wait for you to look through their telescope. Like, how cool is that?
How cool is that? That's like, so New York.
Where else can you go in the world where people are like, yo, come over here, take a look at this, take a look. Like, and that's what it is. They don't care who you are. If you want to look through the telescope, you want to look through the telescope, that's cool. You know, and in the summertime, you know, and it's still light outside. And it's the coolest thing is like for July, I forget. But and Saturn is low slung and you can actually look up and you can see the rings of Saturn right through. It's so great, man.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. So, you know. The organization is doing some really great stuff, so keep it up.
You know, I was really struck in your interview by the number of different topics that you touched on. Let's see, there were black holes, gravitational waves, mining of asteroids, the multiverse, and leaks between different universes, which I think he called interdimensional leaks, as well as sports and climate change. It's just amazing. He has such enormous curiosity for everything around him at the same time that he's very funny.
Yeah, it's funny. We were actually talking just a little before the interview, and he was explaining like why people are naturally curious and why we learn all these things, because we get a little dopamine hit when we learn. So we have a natural tendency to want to learn more things. And of course, he knows all about this because he's naturally curious and has learned about it. So he was able to share that with me.
Yeah, well, he's following in the tradition of Carl Sagan in terms of taking science, things which can be fairly abstract, and making them approachable for the public. And obviously that's what Neil Tyson has done as well with Cosmos Part 2. But that's something that Chuck does as well, and in a very enjoyable way. And nowhere is that more important than when we talk about climate change. I mean, it's a depressing topic these days, and at the same time, we need to get people to be aware of it and to take action to prevent our destroying ourselves. And he manages to do that with humor, and that's just such a valuable thing.
Yeah, definitely having that, have science being more approachable and more accessible, definitely something that he's doing very well. And even other programs like Star Talk and the It's Real initiatives that he's involved with, making science and their scientists and their science more accessible to the general public. Another source that he mentioned was research papers, right? So those are accessible on websites like Archive, and just anyone can look at them. So I just want to remind folks that Wikipedia is an okay starting point, but then you follow the links to the peer-reviewed papers that Chuck was talking about. And I know those can be intimidating, but he gave a really good set of instructions for how lay people can read them and really learn from them.
Yeah, I was also, I'm grateful to him for mentioning the AAA and the fact that we show the universe to the New York public by taking our telescopes out when the weather is nice. But what he didn't mention is that we have a secret motivation for doing that. And it's our dopamine hit as well, which is when somebody looks through one of our telescopes, and maybe for the first time that they've ever looked through a telescope, and they see something like Saturn, and they say, they just react to it with saying, oh, wow, etc. And I always say, that's what we live for, is just hearing that.
Yeah, so many expletives that come out with Saturn and the moon. We might not have Saturn this summer, but we will have the moon, and we will have some public observing. We're all stocked up on PPE. So I hope everyone will check our calendar and website for more information about that.
And now, here's Irene's celestial forecast.
Thanks, Stanley. Mercury and Venus have returned to our evening sky in waning gibbous phases. They'll be increasingly easier to find as their angular separation from the sun increases. Mercury will reach its greatest eastern elongation on May 17th. So if you start looking now, you'll get to see plenty of it. Also, seeking out the inner planets over the next few weeks will be good practice for chasing the crescents around May's new moon. More on that next time. Mars is dimming slowly but surely. During the few hours between sunset and Mars set, the Martian Tharsis region and parts of Valles Marineris will be facing Earth, as seen by observers in New York and others around 73 degrees west longitude. Jupiter and Saturn are rising at earlier morning hours and continuing to separate. Being the faster of the two, Jupiter now appears in Aquarius, where the big fun is happening. That's right, kids. It's time for the Eta Aquarids meteor shower. These bits of debris from Halley's Comet pummel the Earth from April 19th to May 28th, peaking the morning of Cinco de Mayo. If you missed the Lyrids, that's okay. The Eta Aquarids are even greater in number and in speed. Many of its faster meteors will leave a glowing train of ionized air molecules that can linger for several seconds or even longer. There will be a waning crescent in Aquarius on the 5th, but look all over the sky around 3 to 4 a.m. That's before moonrise. You'll get some of the best views. The moon is full on April 26th, then waning and rising later. So the evenings during the first week of May will be moonlessly dark, making this the peak time for the 2021 galaxy season, which brings us to our featured constellation, Canes Venatici, the hunting dogs. Canes Venatici is a small constellation that passes through the zenith for New York City and other mid-northern latitudes. As seen from the city, its two brightest stars, Cor Caroli and Chara, would pass just north and just south of the zenith well before midnight this time of year, if we could see them from the city. The faint region contains a handful of beautiful spiral galaxies, some face-on like M51, the Whirlpool, M94, and then there's some that are mostly face-on like M106 and M63, the Sunflower. These four range in magnitude from 8.1 to 8.6, and there are several more fainter galaxies in Canes Venatici. Since any deep sky object looks best when it's highest in the sky, the hunting dogs make for prime hunting grounds during galaxy season, even if they're not as late as nearby Coma and Virgo. I hope everyone has a chance to look up high up in the night sky for some of these seasonal celestial sights, from galaxies to meteors and everything in between. That's the celestial forecast. Back to you, Stanley.
That's our show. Tune in next time when we speak to Dr. Jillian Bellavery about one of Chuck Nice's favorite topics, black holes. Until then, stop by www.aaa.org to learn more about the AAA and how you can become part of it.
AAA Sky audio editing and original music is by Preston Staley. Our technical producer is Parker Bossier.